Hello and welcome to Off the Canvas podcast. I'm Nick Hobbs, and to coincide with World Mental Health Day, we're going to be speaking to some well-known names from the world of boxing to see if we can have a candid discussion about their personal experiences with mental health. Today, we're talking to a man who had an incredible sporting career even before he started boxing. He came to the sport at 35 and went on to challenge for an English title. He's also the only man in this podcast series so far to have scored against Manchester United. Leon McKenzie is our guest today. Leon, thanks so much for coming on Off the Canvas. We are discussing mental health as well as boxing, so let's start with how you're doing at the moment.
I'm well, thank you. Mental health has been a big part of my life, but obviously mental health covers many forms. So mine happens to be depression, which has been a big part of my life, but there's over 200 mental health illnesses, if you want to sort of label it in that. So I only really speak about depression because it's one of the things that I've experienced myself, and one of the things that I'm very aware of. So when I say mental health, that is predominantly what I would be speaking about if anyone was to ask for any kind of advice, or just when I go and do my talks and stuff. That is what I speak about. Depression is number one, the number one thing for me.
Your experiences with depression, was it something that you were always aware of, or did it kind of creep up on you and develop over time?
No, I wasn't always aware of it. I was very... It's only until I got into, like, sort of my later adulthood of being able to maybe identify and mature with a reason of asking questions. When I was younger, if I look right back to the psychology involved, when I was probably in my teens, early teens, I started noticing that I'm kind of a little bit different, whether that's just different emotions, different things I'm feeling within myself. And I knew that I was very, definitely very hard on myself. I knew that, but there'd be a flip side to that, where if I didn't sort of meet the criteria of what I wanted to achieve, or something didn't happen, or circumstances weren't great, then it seemed to affect me more. So I noticed as I got later on in my adulthood that I'm kind of okay. I can see the things behind it, to the reasons why, because there can be so many triggers to the reasons why we go through certain things. So it was it's quite complicated, and depends how deep you really want to go with it. But I really believe that it can go right back to childhood, for whatever things that you've experienced in those younger years, and that kind of develops you going into adulthood, and maybe some of us don't deal with things as we don't cope with things as well as we should. So it's a big topic of today, and it's something that I try my best to do in that field, to try and just make sure that I do the best I can to speak and be a voice, because there's still a lot of people who are still a little bit reserved with stepping forward and speaking, and being able to not feel scared or feel like you're going to be judged, because it's just because of the whole topic and what some people think behind it. You got people who would do it for the wrong reasons, who maybe speak for the wrong reasons, and it becomes a little bit self-glamorized in that respect, and then that's only really on them. But there is some real sufferers out there who do go through it, who do feel pain, who do, you know, wake up sometimes and not want to be here. And they're the ones that we have to really keep an eye on, because I was one of them people myself once upon a time.
Leon, when it does get on top of you, and when you're going through a bad period, could you try and give the best description you can of what that feels like on a day-to-day basis?
The best description is to describe it. It's very hard to. I can only speak from my heart when you're talking about a topic you're going into a deeper issue now where you're talking about sort of suicide. So for me, anyone that knows me knows what my children mean to me, what sort of type of, you know, what type of person I am. I'm very giving, very just, you know, just a very joyful person. But I got to, I got to a point where I just wasn't coping with life. You know, judge me how you want, like point fingers all you want. But it's not about, you know, everyone feels sorry for me. I'm going through this. It was a point of like not actually wanting to exist anymore. Like, I had a fantastic football career, but unfortunately, you know, at the back end of it, enduring and just going through different life sometimes can throw us. You know, I lost my sister to suicide early on. I probably blocked that out for a good few years, didn't deal with that properly. As I go on to, go into my own life and develop, you know, go through things that life brings, you know, whether that be divorce, whether that be missing my own children, not seeing them enough, you know, they were my triggers. They were the things that brought me pain. You know, whatever, bad investments and things going wrong, you work so hard all your life, and then you're like, you know, you happen to go through things where you've been sort of like, I guess, you know, people haven't been honest with you, and so many things that go on to put you in a position of vulnerability where you start kind of doubting things, and you think, well, what's the point now? Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, it's so hard. Like, what's the point now? And again, I don't speak for people to feel sorry for me. The reason why I speak in the tone and the way I do and the passion that I have is just simply because I know what it feels like to feel that pain, to wake up in the morning and just look up at the ceiling and you're just like, I can't go on. I don't want to be here anymore. It's the worst feeling in the world to plan in your head that, you know what, I think I'm actually just going to check out. And this is how I'm going to do it. And you start articulating how you're going to actually kill yourself. That's what I was going through. So that should be enough to identify where that is at when people, you know, get like that. When you know, I don't care how much, it don't come down to money. I don't care how much money you earn. I don't care how famous you are. I don't care what job you're in or what you do. We're all human beings. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, when you're in that dark place, you sort of stop feeling like a human being. And you do feel judged. And you do feel like a very weak person, especially from the male point of view, because we're all, you know, all the egos and the pride thing. And that's one of the reasons why I do what I do today.
You talk so eloquently about your experiences now. While you were going through it, who were you talking to then, Leon?
Well, there wasn't. The position we're in now, overall, we was nowhere near that, you know, many years ago. So I didn't really speak to anyone. I kind of, you know, being the character I am, I try to get myself together and just try to fix me the best I could. But I think one of the things that stood out for me was seeing a few people after I attempted my own life, seeing a few people actually succeed in doing it. And then I thought, wow, like, let me start trying to be productive and do something where I could potentially save lives. I don't care whether you're a sportsman or you're just a normal human being. If someone sees my story and someone hears hear me speak, then, you know, that for me, that's one of the biggest things for me to give me another purpose in life, to be able to be, have like that powerful presence, to be able to, for someone to listen to me and just, you know what, like, make a choice to basically fight back. You have to fight it. There is no other way. I never took medication. I've been asked to take medication for many years. Like, take it, take it, take it. I never took it. I believed in the format of, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to change this. Like I said, there's over 200 forms of mental health illnesses. So some things you do have to take medication for, I would assume. But for me, experiencing depression for many, many years, I truly believe, and I'm a true testament of it, that you don't need to take medication, because you go to the doctors and you say how you're feeling, you say what this, you know, how you are, then, like, you know, there is other ways. And like I say, obviously fitness has been a massive part of my life. So I do use, you know, I believe in the whole, you know, fitness and the mind, and just trying to keep as active as you can and busy, and don't beat yourself up.
When you stopped playing football and you turned to boxing, now, from the outside, I look at boxing as a sport and as a job, where there are so many causes of injuries. It seems like a very lonely sport with a huge amount of pressure. It doesn't seem like something that would work for somebody who was suffering with depression. So why did you want to turn to boxing?
Because I'm from a family of world champion boxers. My dad was a former British and European champion, and my uncle Duke was a former three-time world champion. So hereditary, and it's in my DNA. And again, if you knew me from when I sort of first came into this world, you know, at a young age, I loved boxing. I was around it every day. Although I played football and I loved football, I had 18 professional years out of football, my passion was always boxing. I loved watching boxing. If I was to come home, I wouldn't necessarily go and watch football. I'd be watching boxing. And that's how that passion was. At the time I finished football and retired from football, yes, lots of things happened, and I went to prison at the back end of my career, and, you know, just not really, again, coping with finishing football in itself, but still finding myself, still, you know, I'm still searching. My soul was still searching to hold on. And obviously I wrote my autobiography when I was in prison, and I could have, when I look back, and it showed me how my character was at the time, because I was very vulnerable a few years before that. And then me going into prison, it was all kind of spiraling out of control. And then going through a second divorce. So all these things were in my head. But when I was actually in that small, you know, what I call it, a waste of time place, I just took it upon myself to, you know, when I first went into prison, I got myself a job straight away. Started cleaning, got myself a cleaner's job. I was in the kitchens giving the other inmates food and just doing everything to keep a routine in my pattern, because I knew that if I did nothing, I didn't use the gym, I didn't work in there, I would probably lose myself. So that was a thought process, being able to look at the picture and say, right, you know what, I know you, Liam, so this is what you need to do. It weren't about who's watching me, judging me. I had to get through that 4 months that I was in there. And then thought, you know what, let me do something with that. Let me start writing my book. Let me start something. I started something. And when I came out, it got worse. You know, I went through another divorce. It got worse, and just things weren't great. So there was a position where at 35 years old, I pretty much lost everything, whether you want to go, you know, financially. I didn't actually go bankrupt, but I could have gone bankrupt. Lost my identity a little bit. Just didn't know what I was going to be doing in life. Didn't know what to do now, which stood out for me. So my initial thought process was that, well, you know what? I'm going to fight back. And I said to my dad, like, I want to jump in the ring. And he just looked at me and smiled and said, right, let's do it. And then from that day, I never really sort of looked back. So everyone that saw it at the beginning is maybe, oh, like, you know, what's this footballer doing and coming to professional boxing, like, oh, really, like, kind of gimmick thing. It wasn't that. It was bigger than that. It was deeper than that. Because my whole journey, if you only have to look at a few years before I did that, and what I was going through in my first year, when I first turned professional, a professional boxer, in that first year of making my professional debut, it was just like I was suffering. Even though I had to get to training every day, to train my hardest, to train my heart out, because I was fighting back in life. I was literally fighting back to just try and hold on. Yes, I knew I was going to be going into another career, but I didn't know really what was going to happen. I didn't even know, like, you know, I didn't know. I thought I wanted to fight. And that year was a really tough year. You know, a lot of tears, a lot of pain, even after training, every day, just going back. You know, was pretty alone. I was by myself at the time, missed my children. All these little things were I was going through a very tough time. You know what? That's why that debut was so special, because, you know, when I sort of come through it, little did I know that I'd be fighting for English titles, Southern Area titles, winning, you know, an international masters title. I didn't know it even be 4 years that I was fighting, even get to those kind of things. I mean, some people fighting all their lives don't even get to fight for an English title. So I was just like, okay, there's, you know, there's something behind what I've just done. It might be nothing to people, but to me, I know what I just done at the age that I did it, to fight back in a very vulnerable position, which no one knew. No one, everyone just looked at me as like, oh yeah, look, you're the footballer, you know, coming in and just trying a thing. That's how people generally would look at it, but it was so much deeper than that, and that's why I think we've done so well, because I was fighting back in my life.
Listening to your story there, and I think people listening to this as well, that scenario you're describing of your first year in boxing, where things just aren't going well for you and you're not feeling good about yourself, it sounds scary.
It's very scary.
Could you try and explain what you had to tell yourself to keep you going, to try and get some momentum going in your life?
Well, it was routine. So, you know, it was the training that was sort of like keeping me wanting to try and have a purpose again. You know, I wanted to try and hold on to something. And obviously boxing brought that for me at that particular time. Although I love the sport, you know, I'm still, you know, if you're going into a boxing ring, I'm an old man going in. So I was up against it. But I guess if I'm totally honest, what kept me going for me personally as a man is seeing my children when I see them. If anyone that sees me, it's something I can't get away from. They are my biggest weakness in life. I'll die for them tomorrow. And they all give me a sense of purpose. Like I can't explain the love I have for my children to you. What they do for me and my life. And when I see them and spend time with them and we have our little, you know, our time together, it's a beautiful thing for me. And that's one I'd say is a main reason of succeeding the way I did. But ultimately, I feel like there's even more of a deeper... I'm not a religious person, but I definitely feel like I'm special to the point of, you know, that God has really sort of like keep an eye on me. So there's different... people believe in different things, but I definitely believe there's a higher, deeper spirit somewhere that, you know, that maybe has a plan for us all. So just being able to tune into what I felt worked for me, and that was literally like routine, having love in my heart, and that, you know, even on the days when I cried my eyes out, I'm a grown man, but you know, there's days where I could be walking down the street and I've got tears in my eyes, just for the feeling of feeling empty, just like I don't understand life. And there's you know, that's just questions that, you know, sometimes can pop up in my head. And then I might get a card from one of my daughters, or you know, I might get a call from my son, tells me he loves me, and then that spark. That's it.
You talked about how when you turn to boxing, some boxing people might sneer at you for being a footballer, coming to the sport later in life, but you could deal with that fine because you knew there was something bigger going on. I just wanted to talk about something in particular in the build up to your fight with John McCullum. He referenced your depression, and it really seemed to get to you. Can you kind of explain why that was such a trigger to make you angry?
Because when I looked John in his eyes at that particular time, and I want to tell you a funny story off the back of that, which is quite, again, this is why I believe in the universe and how it works. But when I looked at that kid in his eyes, I saw certain things in his eyes where it was all, you're pretending right now. You're pretending. Because I knew deep then, like, you suffer yourself. I can see it in your eyes. You suffer, but you're pretending right now. So what he does is he leant on his insecurities at that particular time, and how he was actually feeling within himself. He tried to flip that on me, like, so he became that ignorant person who didn't really care. Like, oh, like, you know, you want people to feel sorry for you and blah 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 and depression. Oh, I'm going to put you back into depression. And like, it's just a reflection of himself at that particular time. But there's one thing that was quite interesting, because we didn't speak for a while. We just didn't see eye to eye, and I just thought maybe this kid is just a little bit different. He's just a bit ignorant and just not educated enough to, you know, number one, be at a press conference and, you know, sell a fight, but number two, when you go personal, and you know, I've lost people to suicide, and I've had my own things going on. 100%, I don't care who you are, I will stand up, not only fight for myself, but fight for everyone that's gone through the pain that I've felt. So that is the reason why I stood up and went for him physically, because he crossed the line. When you cross the line in life, sometimes, you know what, you know, I'm not that person to just sit down and not stand up and fight for what I believe in. Ever since that day, you know what, I actually reached out to him and I said, no matter what, you know, in all fairness, I beat you. You know, you can say whatever you want, whatever it is, it's gone. I have no negative energy towards you. I don't hold nothing. I don't see this, you know, this needs to go forward now. And we need to, you know, he needs to be sort of grown. And you know what? He got back to me and we spoke and he apologized. And he opened up to me and said, you know what? I actually, you know, I've been through it. Which I kind of knew already. But he's like, Leon, I get it. I've been through it. But, you know, I'm just trying to sell the fight. So there's an education factor there where, you know, maybe he wasn't educated at the time, but I think ever since my fight with him, he has probably grown more than he might give himself credit for, but he's probably grown as a person a little bit and maybe understands certain things. So it took me to do that, but everything, the way it went for him, it went all against him in the end. So maybe he learned a lot from that. But you know, he's got a big fight coming up. Sorry, tournament, ultimate tournament in at the O2 in November. And you know what? Funny thing is, I might help him out just with a little bit of training and that.
You were saying when you were looking at him, you could see that perhaps he suffered himself. Do you find from your experiences that you have a sort of sixth sense where you can spot people who are putting on a bit of a front, perhaps?
It's a gift, isn't it? It's a gift. It's a gift. Some people don't have that. You know, but, you know, I have that. I can see it in people. I can see people that have got good energy, good hearts. I can see the people that have got bad energy, bad hearts. I can see you. You don't even have to open your mouth, really. I can see it in your eyes. So, I guess that just comes with life and experiences and people that you deal with day in, day out. But yeah, I believe that.
If there are people listening today who maybe they've got a friend who they suspect might be suffering, or if their friend has told them they're suffering and they're not quite sure how to approach the situation, what would you tell them to do?
You know what? It's family-wise, I think, you know, what I've learned about this is that it's not that people don't care. They don't know how to approach, so they don't know what to say. So they might see something's a little bit odd, but they actually don't know what to say. I always say, like, keep it as simple as you can, to the point of, like, if you're not sure, so you've got a loved one and you're seeing them, their patterns changing, and they're a little bit like, oh, you know, not really, you know, doing the things that you're used to seeing them doing, or all these things, then, you know what, always ask, like, are you all right? Then it's like, do you want to speak about anything? Just, like, maybe seem like you seem a little bit, you know, not with it, or you seem a little bit down. Like, is there anything I can do? Those little words there, just kind of letting that person know that I'm here. You know, rather than you just someone just ignoring it, seeing it, but not actually saying anything, is the worst thing you can do. So, you know, when you do see someone who's a little bit vulnerable, or maybe going through something, or something bad's happened in their life, then you just check up on them, and then what the process will build from there. And if they do open up to you and speak to you, then that's where you can start, you know, taking it further. You start speaking, well, what can we do to kind of help the situation? You know, should we go and see someone professionally? Can we go see a doctor? Should we speak to like a big charity who are very experienced with this? You know, whether that be Calm Mind, there's so many organisations out there that can give us so much help without even, you know, without even thinking. So it's just about being confident, and your heart being in the right place. Not to be so many cases where people, just because they don't understand, there's a frustration in their voice when they're not getting what they want back, how they see it in their heads. And that person might not be snapping out of it, or is struggling to kind of find the way to it, maybe get out of bed. And, like, you know, that's where you got to be as calm, as patient as you can. But at the same time, you got to be strong. So there's times where, you know, my dad said to me one time when I was struggling to get out of my bed after certain things. And my dad came in and said to me, like, son, I love you, but you got a choice to make. You're either going to give up on life, or you're going to get better. There's so many things we can do for one, you know, for each other, just by the sake of a few words.
Leon McKenzie, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me on.
Lovely to hear from Leon there. Speaks so fluently about some very serious subject matter. Now, if you are feeling down, or you've hit a wall for any reason and need to talk or find some more information and support, then please visit thecalmzone.net or call 0800 58 58 58. Calls from the UK are free from landlines, payphones, and all mobiles. Thanks very much for listening to Off the Canvas podcast.